Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Party is Over by Lisa Renee Jones. Narrated by Madeline Mabee. Chapter 1. Get in the vehicle or my brother dies. This is my ultimatum issued by Kane's drug lord uncle, Miguel. He and about 10 of his men have cornered us during our talk in the alleyway behind the building where my father is hosting a huge election event. I'll worry about where the security is that should have blocked off the alleyway in the first place later. Right now, Miguel and his threat are my focus. And considering who Miguel is and the carnage I know him to be capable of ordering, most people would assume me to be rattled. But I'm not like most people. Miguel is dangerous, of that I have no doubt. But Miguel's men hate him, love Kane, and fear a badge, which both myself and my brother possess. He also isn't here to kill us, or we'd be dead. May the odds be in my favor? They are in my favor, but my dumbass brother doesn't seem to understand that. Lila, he warns yet again. This is time two. Do not get in that vehicle, he adds, referencing the huge black SUV Miguel exited a minute ago. Let's talk, Lila, he'd said. Get in. Fuck you very much, is my answer to that, but I don't say the words, and with good reason. I've heard a lot about Miguel. He needs visual aids, and I have a few in mind. On the other hand, the very fact that my brother thinks I'm stupid enough to get in a vehicle with Miguel tells me he's feeling pretty stupid himself. Maybe he had a drink inside. Maybe he was just born that way. I glance in his direction, intentionally taking my eyes off Miguel, letting Miguel know he worries me about as much as a gnat. Considering Kane believes him to be emotional and brutal, that's not 100% true. But I'm an advocate of playing the hand you've been given, and doing so like you have a king and an ace, not a couple of twos. He's a drug lord, Andrew, I say. You're the chief of police and the son of the future governor. He'd much rather own you than shoot you. Now, and only now, I offer Miguel a bored stare. Isn't that right, Miguel? Miguel's eyes narrow sharply, a tick forming in his jaw. I might not kill him, he says, not even bothering to deny I'm accurate. But I could make him bleed. He shifts his weapon to Andrew. Should I demonstrate? To Andrew's credit, maybe he is worthy of the title my brother after all, he doesn't so much as flinch. Miguel narrows his dark eyes on me. He's a tall, good-looking man with a swipe of gray in his dark hair. He favors Kane in looks, but that's where the resemblance stops. One is a willing crime lord, brutal in all he does. The other, the founder of an oil company who was born to a father who once ran the cartel, who most believe should now reign as kingpin. Kane might as well be kingpin for the frequency he is pulled into the cartel to save the lives Miguel butchers with his selfish actions. Since I'd enjoy watching you make a fool of yourself in front of this many witnesses, I lean in a bit and whisper, I think you should go for it. Thank you, Lila, Andrew states tightly. Don't ask me to bury any more bodies for you. Miguel's brow lifts, which I ignore. I'm an expert at ignoring stupid people, even when they're holding guns that happen to be pointed at me. It's a skill I generally believe to be underappreciated, though on some level I think I'm cold inside about everything and everyone but Kane. It's why I married him. He's, ironically, the reason I'm not the female version of Dexter, and also the reason I'm contemplating how to kill a drug lord and get away with it. On a separate but kind of similar note, my brother isn't stupid at all. He just handed me a gift, and it wasn't an accident. I now get to answer Miguel's raised eyebrow. He was kidding about burying bodies for me, I say. Mostly. Miguel snorts. Neither one of you buries bodies. That's not how your badge works. You've never quite gotten the memo about me, now have you? I see dead people. Not all of them were like that when I met them. I'm so scared, Miguel says. I'm shaking in my boots. He laughs. Like I said, you have rules. I do not. See, this is how I end up killing people. They're just too stupid to live. Thank God I have a boss who knows that, much like Dexter, who called his dark side his dark passenger, that I too have my very own dark passenger. And he likes it. He actually seems to prefer when I clean up the trash for him. The worst part about that statement, Andrew replies, is it's true. You do have a Dexter-like dark passenger. Holy hell, you do! And to think I once thought that side of you was all about Kane. You need therapy, sis. I could tell my brother to put a sock in his mental breakdown, but he made a good point. It is all about Kane, I say, at least to Miguel. That's why he had Kane's chopper tampered with. That's why he tried to kill him. He's tired of it all being about Kane. There is a heavy beat of shock in the air, as if I've said what the men have wanted to say, but did not dare. If I wanted Kane dead, he bristles and adds, he'd be dead. Oh, you want him dead, I reply. Of that, there is no question. And as flawed as your plan might be tonight, and it is flawed, you decided to even the playing field. Kane intrudes into your world? You want him to see how easily you can intrude on his. That's why you tried to kill my father tonight. He's well guarded, and if not for Kane, he'd be dead. That effort, this confrontation, it's all about sending a message to Kane that nothing is sacred and there are no rules in war. Is that true? Andrew demands, and he steps toward Miguel. I grab his arm and, thank fuck, he halts. Dumbass brother, protecting the honor of our father, who would rather see us die than give up power. A badge and honor can sometimes make the holder, a.k.a. my brother, act on those things in a way that reads as dumb and blind, which is a good way to get dead and gone. I'm the only one who gets to kill my brother, and the look I level on Miguel says as much. His lips curve, and the look in his eyes is pure devious. Emotional, isn't he? Andrew murmurs something nasty to him in Spanish. Yes, he too knows Spanish, but prefers to keep that detail under wraps. It's a skill, if unknown to others, that can be rather informative. What people don't know can be used against them. In summary, though, Andrew has just told Miguel he will make him pay for what he has done in the nastiest words I've ever heard my brother speak. Hand me the soap and water. The choir boy is in trouble. Miguel's lips quirk at Andrew's graphic vow. He's amused and nothing more. You're La Raza now, he reminds Andrew. Family. We are bonded by your sister and my nephew. Don't forget it. He glances at me. Tell my hombrecito Kane, hombrecito meaning little man, Uncle Miguel said hello. He turns to walk away, giving me his back, dismissing any danger I might represent. If I let him walk away, he looks strong. Kane looks weak, like the little man, and both me and Andrew look like easy targets. I don't need to think any harder. Now is the time I test his men's loyalty, because I'm about to give them a reason to act against me and for Miguel. I reach for my purse, and my knife is in my palm, in the open, in an instant. And anyone who knows me well knows what happens when I hold a knife. Chapter 2 The blade I hold in my delicate little hands, everyone knows delicate describes me to a T, is nice and shiny, not to mention sharper than even my tongue. In other words, it's lethal. And as much as I love a good lethal blade, I'd prefer my firearm right about now. It's easier to handle multiple targets. But it's under my skirt, and if I show these men my underwear, I'll have to kill them. Not that I'm not willing to kill them all, but considering not one of them stopped me from retrieving my weapon, I'm not sure that's how this has to end. But then, the cartel's preference for Cain over Miguel in the wake of Cain's father's death is the entire problem at hand. It's why Miguel wants Cain dead. It's why Cain can't seem to walk away from what was his father's world, but never his world by aspiration. A criminal organization that craves Cain for his ability to both control his enemies and create a terrible existence outside of violence is pure irony in its finest form. It also speaks of what a low-life, ineffective leader Miguel has become since claiming the reins some years before. His is a legacy that would be built on rivers of blood if Cain didn't step in and negotiate a better path. It is this inside view that has allowed me to accept Cain's connection to the cartel, rather than shun its existence. But there is a truth here I can never escape. If I kill Miguel, Cain inherits the cartel, and for this reason I have promised Cain not to kill his uncle. But I never said anything about not hurting him. Hurt him, I intend to. And I have such a delicious plan to bring him to his knees. Miguel's back remains my target, and I don't do the backstabbing thing. I prefer him to know what hit him, and that's me. Miguel, I call out. He rotates to face me, and his gaze lands on the blade in my hand, a moment of concern followed by unmerited relief. It washes over his expression, thick like honey on a hungry bear's face, sticky and sweet. At least to me, because it proves he, too, is stupid. You see, what few people know about me is that I was on a knife-throwing team in college. Yep, little ol' me. I have always liked a good, shiny, and sharp blade, and with practice and time, I learned how to throw with more force than a man Cain's size. It's all in the grip and flick of the wrist. I lift my arm and crook back my wrist, fully intending to plant my blade in a place the sun does not shine. It's time for Miguel Mendez to be brought to his knees. Chapter 3. Suddenly, a hand closes down on my hand from behind, and with a grind of my teeth, I twist around, with every intention of going to war. I find Cain standing there, having come from who knows where, but clearly not from the door where I'd exited.
"He's mine, Bella," he says softly. "You know this. We agreed."
We agreed I wouldn't kill him until the time was right. I didn't say I wouldn't castrate him, which was my intent. His eyes light with amusement.
"Of course it was, Bella. And as much as I would have enjoyed watching, not now, not here."
It's a statement that makes it clear the man knows me. Not here, not now, implies later. In other words, the dream is not over, and therefore I can wait, but not forever. My patience for Miguel and the cartel in general is wearing thin. But this is also a cockfight, and as much as I enjoy ending cockfights, the irony of me not having a cock and all, I no longer win if Cain loses. And right now, his perceived control over the cartel by pretty much everyone is in our favor. This belief that he is the true kingpin influences the views of the society, Poacher specifically, on how formidable an opponent we represent. I allow my wrist to soften. Cain registers this action with no emotion when he would normally gloat at any form of compliance on my part. But nope, nada, not this time.
His jaw sets hard, his eyes harder. There is a brutality to his stare that is unfamiliar but not unknown to me. Miguel has pushed Kane too far. Kane releases me, and he's already focused on his uncle, closing the space between himself and Miguel. He doesn't bother with a weapon, which tells me he knows the loyalty of the men. He knows that Miguel holds a gun, but in turn, he holds the masses. Andrew curses under his breath and then whispers, "Is he crazy?" "Far from it," I assure him, "but the blade in my hand is ready, as is every muscle in my body." Kit, Kane's bodyguard, who is incessantly present, steps between me and my brother, while Jay, my pretend bodyguard, steps to my side. Pretend, because I have to protect him, not him me. But we don't talk about that. Okay, I do, but he doesn't. Despite this, these two men take my abuse and keep coming back. They irritate the fuck out of me, but they are family. I would kill for them, and they will kill for us. Kane halts in front of Miguel and grabs the barrel of his uncle's weapon, pointing it at his chest. My fingers clench the handle of the blade a little tighter. I know what Kane is doing. I know he knows what he's doing. But one pulse of a finger, and he's dead.
"You want to kill me, uncle?"
he challenges for all to hear.
"Have the balls to do it, standing in front of me."
Miguel answers in low, clipped Spanish, meant for Kane's ears only. Kane replies with one word, mentiroso, liar. Followed by the words,
"You test me, uncle,"
in English. It's a love-hate moment for me with Kane. It's just a plain surreal moment to watch the man I love act like the kingpin we both deny him to be, while standing down the man who is the true kingpin, if only in name. Because right now, Kane's decision not to draw his weapon sends a message. And that message is that Miguel is a pussy who doesn't have the courage to shoot him, too weak to be feared. His uncle says something to Kane in Spanish, and again his tone is low and exclusive. Kane replies in an equally hushed voice, after which they stare at one another, and only when Miguel lowers his weapon does Kane step backward. The two men stare at one another again, and then Miguel lifts his hand, motioning to the men. All weapons are lowered, and the men retreat, packing into the vehicles. Kane remains focused on Miguel, and his attention might as well be a sniper weapon for its intensity. Seconds tick by, each a heavy thud, echoing in an otherwise silent alleyway. Finally, Miguel breaks the connection and climbs into his vehicle. A few beats later, his SUV is leaving the alley. There is what feels like a collective breath expelled by our group, as if everyone was waiting for an explosion that has now been avoided. At least for the moment. Kane doesn't move, waiting for a full retreat, as if he expects more, as if we haven't avoided the explosion at all. Chapter 4. I tuck my knife in my bra and close the space between me and Kane, stepping in front of him, only to have him drag me to him, kiss me hard and fast, but oh so thoroughly. Which is ridiculously sexy, until he demands,
"What the hell was that, Lila?"
Romance ended. War started. I know what's on the line, Kane. I wasn't going to kill him. The fantasy was where it stopped.
"If you would have gotten in that vehicle, he would have killed you."
"You underestimate me."
"You underestimate him because you see me control him." "That wasn't me controlling him, Lila, or you wouldn't have been in a back alley with guns pointed at you."
I push out of his arms, and when I would fight onward, a flashback of those photos of Kane sitting in the diner the killer left for me on that theater wall. And all those dolls hanging from nooses delivers memories of how terrified I was for Kane. I couldn't breathe until I saw him, until I knew he was alive and well.
I freaked out, and I don't freak out unless it ends with me stabbing someone. I am a fool for not reading what is really going on with Kane since his chopper crashed. He's been freaking out since then, but doing it quietly and to himself, not loud and in my face, as I did him. And I know why. He crashed into the ocean and a sea of bad history. My mother died in a plane crash, and his mother died in a car accident. The only difference between the two was my mother's crash was called an accident. His mother's death was claimed by a cartel enemy. Kane is letting the past get in his head, letting himself believe history will repeat itself and that I'm the next victim. I step into him and grab the lapels of his suit. I'm not her. His eyes narrow.
What does that mean? He asks tightly. You're not her.
Your mother. I'm not going to die on you. I have the benefit of knowing what happened to both our parents. It's my armor, Kane. I know how to watch my back, and I don't die easily.
Neither do I, Lila. And with the same knowledge as armor, I still ended up in the middle of the ocean.
In other words, I'm not wrong about where his head is at right now. Or these past few weeks, but I never get the chance to say more. Obviously done with this conversation, he says, "We need to leave," and lifts a hand, much like Miguel had. In apparent response, there's a whistle somewhere behind me. Kit and Jay appear to our left, and almost instantly, a black SUV races toward us and halts by our sides.
"Let's go," Kane orders,
catching my arm and attempting to haul me with him. I plant my feet. Because if I leave now, he won't come at me again? Staying here and walking back into that party tells him that we don't give two fucks about his nonsense. It's the stronger move. It's not like you not to make the stronger move, Kane.
Why do you always have to fight me, woman? His nonsense is not what I'm worried about, Lila. He's emboldened in a way Miguel is never emboldened. He's working with someone else.
I've been saying that since your chopper went down.
And now we're in agreement, he concludes.
Yes, but for once I'm not going to point the finger at Poacher. Miguel all but admitted he tried to kill my father. Poacher wants my father alive. He's his political titan.
The society wants him alive, he says. Your father is walking all over Poacher, and Poacher doesn't like to be beneath anyone's foot. Let's have this conversation elsewhere.
He can't afford to lose my father's political standing.
Poacher will do anything to protect himself, he reminds me. Think about it. If your father would have died tonight and done so with Poacher by his side, no one, especially the society, would suspect he had anything to do with it.
Then we're back to my initial conclusion. Poacher and Miguel are working together.
While I didn't believe Poacher would align himself as such, Kane replies, after seeing him with your father tonight, I changed my mind. Yes, I believe Poacher and Miguel are working together.
All you're doing is making me wish I killed Miguel when I had the chance. I hold up a hand. I know. Not until your man is ready to replace him, so you don't have to. You don't have to put that on repeat, Kane. I know.
And yet, you had a knife in your hand, Lila.
In this case, it's not what he just said to me that's a problem, but what he didn't say, which is that he never knows what will happen when I have a knife in my hand. He's not wrong. I might have missed Miguel's balls and hit his heart. I can't be sorry about that, but none of this tells the whole story. Kane is still not acting like Kane. I narrow my eyes on him. If you think it's Poacher working with Miguel, why are you not inside right now?
Because you have a knife in your bra, Lila.
I had a knife in my purse when we walked in the door.
That was then. This is now.
Andrew irritatingly chooses that moment to remind us he's present. He steps to our side opposite the SUV in confrontation mode, starting with Kane.
Can I just say I both love and hate how obviously you are in charge of the cartel? Because I appreciate you de-escalating that shit, Kane. But this, tonight, is exactly why I didn't want you to marry my sister.
Kane's lips tighten, but Andrew has already turned his joy and love on me.
Why can't you and that damn FBI badge just take them down? He holds up a hand. Don't answer. I know why. Because of Kane.
It's called evidence, Andrew, I snap. I thought they taught police chiefs about that requirement, but maybe they skip that for you small-town boys. Or maybe it's just a Quantico thing. He comes right back at me.
You can be such a bitch.
Bitch meets brother. There's a connection, Andrew. You make me a bitch.
What I want to make you do is your job. Are you even trying to take Miguel down?
What cartel have you ever known that was taken down and anything good came from it? They're up again in a day. They kill someone for payback. That could be you. We have to control them, and that's what Kane can do for us.
That's a no. Listen to yourself, Lila. You're now burying bodies you murdered and justifying who you married by some good he does for society by running a fucking cartel.
Listen to yourself, Andrew. You sound like a pussy.
He scrubs his jaw. I better stop before I kill you and then he kills me.
Obviously, he means Kane, and I truly want to bust my brother's balls right now. You are clearly melting down, Andrew. We were never in danger.
Your family, Andrew, Kane assures him. That means you're protected.
Andrew's gaze jerks to Kane's.
I saw that tonight. It felt good, too, to be that protected brother-in-law. And if you think I'm serious, you shouldn't be running a cartel or an oil company.
He motions to the door.
I'm going inside before the hordes of reporters find us and connect this situation to Dad's attempted murder.
He starts walking toward the hotel. Apparently, my brother still believes he's safer with my father than he is with us. Somewhere along the line, he forgot that those who are closest to us are usually the ones who kill us. Family is dangerous. And he's a fool if he thinks Dad is the lesser evil than Miguel. But it's not Miguel or my father, or even Kane, that scares Andrew. It's me. And I can't help but wonder if that's because I remind him of himself. Burying Roger's body bothers him a bit too much, considering he was a serial killer who tried to kill his sister. It's fucking with him, much like me stabbing my own rapist to death, who intended to kill me, did me. Because it woke something inside me. I wonder if there is more to my brother than meets the eye.
Chapter 5. The door to the hotel opens and then shuts, and I'm still contemplating whether or not Andrew is fighting his inner serial killer when the door opens again. I expect Andrew to reappear and present me a chance to ask him point blank. What I get is Jack Cox in dark-rimmed glasses, a tuxedo, and his wavy hair slicked back. Apparently, I'm seeing serial killers everywhere, because Jack, the forensic tech, the wannabe detective, who is more obviously a serial killer than Andrew, is now present and accounted for. He's also most certainly not invited to my father's event. This little pipsqueak shows up wherever I am, and it's starting to get old. I step forward, already in a confrontational charge, when Kane captures my arm and turns me around to face him.
We're sitting ducks in this alleyway, Lila.
He won't be bold or stupid enough to come back.
First your father, now you. Third time's a charm.
Agent Love, Jack calls out across the alleyway.
There's been another murder.
He starts walking toward us. Kane's jaw clenches and he releases me. Because that's the thing about Kane. He respects my job, even when it's inconvenient, which is most of the time.
And thus far, all things Jack Cox are inconvenient, which is the least.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?